Be here for the meeting are here.
Oh,
So
good.
I think we're good to start.
Okay. Well, thank you everyone for joining the call this afternoon or at noontime today. I'd like to call the meeting of the DC Bar Board of Governors April meeting on April 15th, I'm sorry, Tuesday, April 16th, 2024 to order. And I guess our first agenda item is the consent agenda.
Well, the president's report first, if you prefer.
Yeah. Okay. The president's report. And well, okay. I just have to gather my notes on that, Bob, together.
Okay.
Okay. So can
We
I
can
just?
go ahead and move to the consent agenda, then I can do my report while you're doing
Okay.
that.
Okay. How about that?
That's fine.
And so for the consent agenda, we are approving the minutes from our last meeting. I believe that we would need a vote to accept the minutes and the consent agenda.
I'll move that.
Thank you. Second.
Second.
Okay. And that was Ramya, was
Yes.
that?
I mean, there are multiple of us, so you can put me down a second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? All right. How about Bob, if we go to you first and then I'll look for that information. I'm sorry about the confusion.
Not a problem at all. So, as always, there is plenty of information about what's happening at the bar in the CEO report that's in your materials. Just a few highlights on some things that I wanted to bring to your attention. Just a reminder that license renewal begins in just a few days on May 1st. And as part of that process, we will be launching the lawyer referral service. The messaging has already begun to go out, and an email will go out as well today or tomorrow. But as part of the license renewal process, members will be able to sign up to become part of that. Over the course of the next month or so, they'll be able to upload their profile information, and then beginning in the fall, we'll use an AI system that will begin matching prospective clients with the lawyers, and it will learn and fine-tune along the way how that matching takes place to better match the prospective clients with the lawyers. Very exciting. We're eager to see how many people take advantage of the early opportunity. You're going to hear shortly from John Ingrassi, who's the chair of the nominations committee, about the nominations process and also to appoint a public member, a non-lawyer member, to the board. But as to the election schedule, the voting will begin on April 29th. It's going to be just as it has been for the past several years, all electronic. And it's going to run through June 4th, 11:59 p.m. We will announce the results on June 7th. And then on May 2nd, there's going to be a member reception with the candidates forum. So the president-elect candidates will have a chance to address the membership. Instead of having just a member reception or just a candidates forum, we decided to put them all together and increase the amount of folks in the room, but also the exposure, particularly of our newer members who tend to come to a member reception, to the what will be our new leadership as well. I'd like to turn to Kelly for a moment to give us an update on the mayor's proposal for access to justice funding and what's going on with that.
Thank you, Bob. So on April 4th, Mayor Bowser proposed her FY25 budget, and it includes a really drastic cut in access to justice initiative funding. It's about a 67% cut in funding. So in essence, the proposal is to cut funding from last year's $31 million to $10.45 million. And this is significant because, as you're aware, about a third of our budget comes from this funding that is distributed by the DC Bar Foundation. This funding supports our staff, and we provide services to residents for housing and family and probate matters. So on April 25th, Charles and I will be testifying in front of the DC Council to urge the council to restore funding. It will be an uphill battle. There are many cuts made to the mayor's budget and a focus on other issues. So what is our call to action? On April the 8th, Crystal sent an email, and I actually will put a link in the Zoom chat, that accesses the Access to Justice Commission, which has a sample toolkit. And in this toolkit, you will see a sample tweets, sample emails to send to the council. And really, the success of this campaign will be through continued and sustained advocacy for a restoration of funding. Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly. For better news, I'll turn to Darren for a minute to talk about both the CLE abroad trip that just concluded and the Peyton Leadership Academy.
Thanks, Bob. Yes, we are just back from our DC bar journey to Portugal. We had a great group, about 29 travelers were with us, including some very prominent VIPs, both chief judges and their spouses, including Judge Robert Rigsby. And Professor Salima Snow, former board member, who joined us from UDC. And of course, our immediate past president, Ellen Jakovic, who I'm going to ask in a minute to talk about some of the really important programming that we had while we were there. But ultimately, we ended up with about 9 credit hours for our members. The trip was Lisbon, 4 days, then we traveled to Porto. We stopped in places like Obidos, Sintra, Nazaré, and then traveling back through Lisbon, through Coimbra, where we saw the famous Law University, and then even a stop at the religious site of Fatima. So all in all, it was an outstanding trip. We got some incredible reviews back, and folks already want to start planning. Well, we've already started planning for the next one in October to Hague in the Netherlands. But Ellen, could you help me out here a little bit and talk about some of the courses? Because that was the feedback that we really got the most accolades for. And I thought it was great.
Sure, Darren, happy to chime in. I just want to echo what Darren said. It was a fabulous trip. And since such a wonderful mix of terrific sights, amazing, delicious food, wonderful programs, and just really good fellowship among all the attendees. We had a wonderful mix of DC Bar members. As Darren said, we had very honored guests, our chief judges and their spouses. We also had members from Denver, Colorado, San Diego, California, Wisconsin. So we had some non-DC Bar members who had heard about our trip and wanted to come as well. So it was a really nice mix. And the CLE programs were just really fabulous. One of my favorites was we had, and I can't tell you exactly what the organization was, but it's essentially the organization that polices and regulates the production of port in Portugal. And port is like champagne. It can only use that domain name if the wine was produced in the Porto region and has certain characteristics that this organization monitors very rigorously about sugar content and alcohol content and soil in which it's grown. But we spoke with the top attorney in their legal office, and it was a really interesting conversation about all their ties around the world, enforcing these trademarks and domain names. And of course, at the end, we had a really wonderful tasting of a white port, which I learned so much about because I thought port was only red, but it comes not only in white, but also a variety of gradations down to their really darkest red port. We also had some fabulous presentations we visited the Constitutional Court. We had a wonderful presentation about the laws, how the constitutional system works, the court system. And then we had a really interesting kind of Chatham House rules talk, a former legislator who also has now a podcast about the workings of the government, their fight against corruption. So we had some really fascinating programs. We also spoke with some women attorneys, and we talked about, you know, how women are advancing into positions of leadership in the Portuguese law system. So it was a great trip, really wonderful fellowship. And as I say, just terrific food and wine And I hope many of you will think about going to The Hague. I've been on the Scotland trip and now the Portugal trip, and they were fabulous and time well spent and a wonderful opportunity. Really, also, our chief judge, Judge Anna Blackburn Rigsby, and her husband have gone on both trips. So it was a really nice opportunity to get to know her and her husband better. So Darren, just fabulous trip. So happy to have been a part of them. Thank you to you and Carly Dieseldorf, who really are our staff folks that make sure that the trip goes well and work hand in hand with our fabulous partners at CLE Abroad to just make this trip a wonderful, wonderful offering to our DC Bar members. So thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I really appreciate that. And it's interesting, but one of the courses that we got the greatest compliments for was an add-on at the last minute. It was a speaker. Her name is Beatrice Gomes, a former elected official, but she's at the foremost anti-racism activist in the country. And she runs an organization that I guess is somewhat similar to Black Lives Matter. But really, they are really at the beginning of their civil rights movement. And it was nice to be a part of that. And with the historians that we spoke to over there, you know, unfortunately, they need to confront their past, which included being the economic hub of slavery. And what I thought was going to be, you know, a learning experience for us really became a teachable moment for the folks in academia that we met over there. Professor Snow especially was very engaged in the conversation, as were our chiefs. And so that was a very special moment, especially for the folks that aren't in the DC bar that were with us. So as Alan said, a great trip. I think this is just the beginning of something great for this program that we're building. And I hope all of you at some point can join us on future trips. Okay, so the Leadership Academy. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say that the Leadership Academy is, we're raring to go. One of our first programs is going to be a special invitation by Chief Judge Anna to bring the cohort over to watch her in action in an oral argument and then speak to the cohort afterwards in her chambers. So we're looking forward to that. We ended up with 30 folks. We wanted 24. We were struggling to even get to that. And then suddenly at the last second, I don't know if it was due to the good outreach of this group or other volunteers, but we actually ended up having too many and we had to cut a few in the end. But the 30 that we have are really strong, strong candidates from all across the spectrum, government, big firm, small firm, nonprofit. And I can't wait to see what this group is capable of doing. So. That's my update. Well,
thanks, Darren. And I'll wrap up with just two reminders. The Judicial Leadership Luncheon is on April 25th. The time shift a little bit to 11:30 because the court asked us to start earlier so they can get back. It'll be the first time since before the pandemic that we've had this opportunity to bring the bar and all the bench together. So it'll be all the judges from the DC Court of Appeals, presiding judges throughout the Superior Court, the law school deans and yourselves, and then of course some of the senior bar staff. So it's going to be a great opportunity to inform the court about what's been going on at the bar. And then finally, it's hard to believe, but the next board meeting that we have will be our last board meeting of the fiscal year. And so it's June 10th. It'll be followed by a reception, as it always is, to honor our outgoing members. And I hope to see all of you there in person in the building. And with that, Charles, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for all the great information. I now want to, I'll leave some of my remarks towards the end, but since we have Paul Smith on, Paul, we'd like you to come on and talk to us about a report on the 2024 ABA mid-year meeting, and welcome to our Board of Governors.
Thank you, Charles, and hi, everyone. It's a pleasure to be able to talk to you. I had the honor of serving on this board for a couple of terms some time back, and then moved on to be the elected representative of the DC Bar in the House of Delegates, and most recently became the new state delegate for DC. So this is my first report back to you about what happened at the mid-year meeting in February. And I will say a couple of the highlights of the mid-year meeting were major speeches, one by Mary Smith in the middle of her year as president of the ABA, who is practically an honorary member of the DC delegation. She's so friendly to us. And the other was by Judge Blackburn Rigsby herself in her capacity as chair of the Conference of Chief Justices. She gave a great address to the group. And finally, we confirmed the election of a new president-elect of the bar. Michelle Behnke of Madison, Wisconsin, will be taking over as president of the ABA. Not next year, that's a guy named Bill Bay, a former head of the litigation section, but 2 years from now, it will be Michelle Behnke. Now, as many of you probably know, most of the conversation in the hallways at ABA meetings these days is about the budget and the shrinking revenues and concern about restructuring the ABA and the like. And this produced the resolution passed by the House of Delegates that caused the most work to be done by the leadership of the ABA. All of the Board of Governors and everybody spoke multiple times to try to make sure the House of Delegates would in fact pass what they thought they needed to, which was a dues increase of $45 across the board. It ended up passing with not much in the way of controversy, but it was certainly viewed as an essential thing for the ABA. Then, of course, there were the substantive resolutions, which, as they always are, were all over the map in all kinds of different areas. Just to give you a flavor of the variety, we had one from the Virgin Islands Bar arguing that the decisions of territorial Supreme Courts on issues of territorial law should be viewed as just as final as those of state Supreme Courts dealing with state law and should be respected by federal courts instead of overruled by federal courts, which appears to be the normal pattern these days. And then we had another resolution calling for a reduction in the use of animals in experimental research for drugs and other products. And finally, from the international law section, a call for the United States and other countries to do more to address the genocide of the Rohingya people in Myanmar. As often is the case, many of the more controversial and interesting resolutions came from the section of civil rights and social justice. And so we had one calling for an extension of the Amber Alert system, which is usually used to track missing children in Indian country and in Alaska, to cover missing and abducted adults, primarily Native women, in areas where there's little in the way of law enforcement. The hope is this can provide greater protection to them. We had another one calling for an end to laws passed to try to limit curricula in public schools and to limit books in school libraries, laws designed to protect children from being exposed to the experiences, roles, and contributions of various groups. These are the Don't Say Gay laws and the laws that are designed to prevent education of students about things like slavery and Jim Crow, on the theory that this will make children feel bad about American history. CRSJ also proposed better enforcement of the Death in Custody Act, which is a federal law requiring reports by states about any person who dies in jail or other custody. Apparently, it is enforced only only once in a while. A major resolution we passed dealt with the right of all pregnant women who show up in emergency rooms in need of emergency care to get that care as needed, consistent with a federal law called EMTALA, and despite any state law to the contrary. This is an issue that's actually in the Supreme Court right now, coming out of Idaho, and the tension between federal law and state laws is being addressed by the justices. And so the House of Delegates weighed in favor of providing emergency care up to and including abortion care as needed, consistent with the federal statute. Another one was, and this was the one that got by far the most controversy of the entire day, was a resolution calling for public schools not to make disclosure to students' parents when students begin to come out as transgender or non-binary in the school environment and ask, for example, to be called by a different name. The resolution's authors thought that it is extraordinarily important that people in this situation be able to be out in schools, even if they can't, they don't feel it's safe for them to be out at home. There were, of course, unsurprisingly, some in the House who disagreed with that and thought parents need to know when this is happening. The House of Delegates ended up passing the resolution protecting the confidentiality of the children in that situation, but it did meet quite a bit of debate. Another interesting civil rights issue was urging law schools to, in their admissions processes, to treat tribal membership in Native American tribes as a political classification, not a racial classification, for purposes of being able to consider it as a form of affirmative action, despite the Supreme Court's recent Harvard decision barring so-called racial preferences in admission to universities. This, the theory being that political classification is not subject to the same strict scrutiny as race. And finally, I mentioned the young lawyers urged all law schools to consider part-time programs because they feel that that is a way of getting greater access to the school for people who can't afford to pay for full-time and need to continue their employment while they're in law school. So that's sort of a rundown of the kinds of issues we were dealing with, as Charles knows, you were there. I will say that all of us who are serving in the House would love to hear from the bar about anything that you think is an issue of concern that we ought to be raising with the ABA in one forum or another. So feel free to reach out to me or to your DC bar delegates, including Jean Vita, who wanted to be here today but was called to a meeting. But thank you for the opportunity to speak to you, and let me know if there's any questions.
Thanks so much, Paul. Any questions, thoughts, comments for Paul?
Well, again, thanks. I appreciate it.
And Paul, the annual meeting is coming up on...
Always the first week in August, yeah. I'll be back to tell you about that.
Right. And that'll be in Chicago?
It's in Chicago, yeah. They've cut down on the more interesting locations to save money.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Paul. We appreciate it.
Take care.
We'll talk to you soon. Thank you. All right. Well, now I believe is John on?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. So now we'll turn to our report for the nominations committee. That was also in tab 6 of your materials. John, welcome to our Board of Governors meeting, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you, Charles. Thanks for that. And thanks to everyone on the call. So I'll give the report. I'll kind of go through the highlights of the committee. With the work that we've done and who is in the slate, and I think you all have the materials on that. I'm John Ingrassia. I'm chairing the committee this year. I've had the privilege of serving on the committee twice now. This is my second time there. Served on the committee last year, and then this year I was asked to chair the committee and did that, and I'm glad to have done it. It was a good and fun and interesting experience, and I think we've put forward a really good slate for you all, and we'll talk about that in a minute. I want to thank, just kind of before we get into that, Bob and Aram and Crystal, really for making it easier for us, keeping us organized, keeping our agendas, and making sure we had all the right materials to go through. And there were a lot of materials to go through. We had a lot of great candidates. It took some time and some meetings and some work and some effort, and I think we've got it down to a very nice slate. But definitely, there was a lot of doing to get there. So thanks for the support there. My practice generally is more, I would say, transactional and regulatory. Is the short summary of that. I practice antitrust. I practice foreign investment review under CFIUS, mergers and acquisitions, And I'm here at Proskauer, Proskauer Rose in DC. I'm a partner at Proskauer. So that's kind of my introduction. In terms of the committee, many of the folks on the committee, folks on this call know well, including some that I see on here, and Ellen was on there with us. And I'll just kind of flip through quickly some of the names. And you've seen these before. We had Megan Lucchini on there, Legal Services Corp, Paul Lee at Steptoe, Charles Lem at Wiley, Professor Snow, of course, on the committee, Ellen on the committee. Thanks, Ellen. Nellie Montenegro on the committee, Andrea Fester, Kim Keenan at JAMS. I think I've captured most of us, or hopefully all of us, but it was a good group of wide-ranging experience that we all brought to it. So I was glad to work with everyone on the group, and you know, hopefully we'll get a chance to work together again on some things. In terms of the slate, I'll start with just sharing again how broad the candidate pool was that we were selecting from. We had, I think it was like 40 plus submissions for the various positions, and a wide sort of range of diversity in all ways. You know, diverse candidates, diverse practice areas, government, private practice, small firm, large firm, really across the board. And so we were glad to see that. And we tried to reflect that as best we could in the candidate pool as well. So turning specifically to some of the candidates, and I don't think I'll go through all of it here. You have it in the materials, but I'll highlight at least our two president-elect candidates who we did interview. So the full committee or the committee members that were available at those slots interviewed remotely the two president-elect candidates, and those are Hardeep Grover and Sandina Montani. Hardeep Grover is an on-demand chief legal officer, so he serves to different entities, corporations in DC, and has done that for 8 years or so, and has been involved also with other volunteer organizations, including the South Asian Bar Association here in DC. Sandina is a partner at Crowell, has been there for 4 years or so, coming from a prior firm before that. She's past president at the Women's Bar Association, and she's a labor and employment lawyer there at Crowell. And so within there, you can see large firm and sort of, you know, smaller independent diversity in the candidate pool. With respect to treasurer-elect, I'll flag again just those two candidates for us. There you have Philip Husband, who is general counsel at the DC Department of Health, has been there 10 years or so, so significant. And you also have for treasurer-elect Joshua Mogul, who is at DOJ, deputy chief of staff there at DOJ. That's more recent. More recent government service for Josh. He was at Wilmer before that for some time. Those are the four candidates for president-elect and treasurer-elect, respectively. For Board of Governors, I won't go through each. Happy to answer any questions on them. We have 12 candidates for Board of Governors. And then running through the slate, for ABA delegate, I see Diane's on the call here. Thanks, Diane. For ABA delegate, we have five candidates. And then we have our two non-lawyer candidates for Board of Governors that we put forward, I believe, earned the materials as well. And I think Bob maybe can clarify. I think there's an action item.
Yeah. Yeah, John, I just had a quick question on the ABA delegates. Isn't there different classes in terms of age, right, for nomination? No.
We have one delegate who is under 36, but that is not this year.
Okay.
We do that every other year.
Okay. I'm not sure about that.
The action item we have is there's a recommendation from the committee to the board for an appointment of a non-lawyer position. And we had several candidates, well, two primary candidates. And the recommendation of the committee is Gaffar Chowdhury, and his materials are in your packet that they're upon the portal. The committee has made that recommendation, but ultimately it's the board's decision about the appointment, who will be replacing our two-timer, Peggy, who has to term off this time around.
All right. Well, thank you, John. Are there any questions regarding the action item in terms of the appointment of the non-lawyer member? Mark and Patrick?
Yeah. What was the basis of recommending Gafar over DeAndre Roche?
So I don't know if I can answer that for you off the top of my head. I would have to look back. I'll ask if I know Ellen was there and Bob and others, if anyone recalls specifically.
Sure. I'm happy to jump in at least with my perspective. Just one member of the nominations committee. And in particular, I do know Gafar. I've worked with him in the Women's Bar for years and years. And I think the longevity of his involvement with the Women's Bar, as well as other organizations, his the depth of his involvement as well, kind of led the committee to go in his direction. We thought both candidates were eminently qualified. So it was choosing among two stellar candidates and not that one didn't meet, you know, our standards. It was just that we had two great candidates and the tide just kind of tipped to Gafar's side.
Patrick?
Thanks.
Yeah, and just to clarify, so these are the only two candidates for the position, or are they the top two that the nomination selected with a one and two? What, just wanted to confirm that.
Crystal can confirm because she was managing the list, but I'm pretty sure these were the two that we had, okay. The two candidates.
Great, thank you.
Right, and that's DeAndre Roche as the second candidate.
Right. Charles, I don't know if you see the hand, but Brian's got his hand.
Yeah, just a quick question. Remind me the difference between the non-lawyer members and the other members of the board.
Yeah, so there are 23 members altogether, 20 of whom are lawyers and are elected by the membership, and then three who are not lawyers, and they are appointed by the board.
But they have the same powers as the other members?
Yeah, unfortunately, no. So they are not. There was a member referendum back in the 1980s where they tried to empower the non-lawyer members to vote as well, and that failed narrowly. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, we're sort of stuck. Now it's on the to-do list to revisit that issue. But we do have a little bit of, there are a number of referenda that we are subject to, and there may be a point at which we can petition the Court of Appeals to clean that up. But candidly, we're waiting for the Supreme Court to make the decisions on the First Amendment challenges, because those referenda, they're sort of like there's a package of things that need to be fixed, if you will. I put that high on the list.
Okay, thanks.
I see June smiling.
Yeah, okay. Are there any other questions? If not, we would need a motion to accept the appointment of, let's see, Gafar. How do you pronounce his last name?
Charles. Natalie's got Natalie has a question.
Okay, Natalie.
Hi, Charles. This isn't a question. It's just a statement about Ms. Roche. I actually had served on the Practice Management Service Committee with DeAndra, and I can just echo that she is eminently qualified. I don't know Mr. Chandri, but I just want to put just a little plug in there for DeAndra, because I've known her for many years and she's a fantastic person, and she contributed greatly to the Practice Management Service Committee for many years, and I served with her when I was vice chair and chair of that committee. And she's been very, very involved with the DC bar over the years. And she's an exceptionally well-qualified candidate. And she also has exceptional character and integrity. And I know that firsthand from having worked with her. So just a little counterbalance to Mr. Chaudhry there.
June?
I would just mention, I met with Gafar virtually. I was very impressed with his public service, particularly to the Women's Bar Association. I don't know him, but we had a great conversation, and I think my sense is that he would make a terrific non-lawyer member of the Board of Governors.
Well, thank you. Bob, this is always one of the things that we do is we have great candidates and then we have to pick one and we have to decide. Would there be any way, when in reaching out to whoever loses to continue their involvement? I think that we talk about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. There are opportunities for non-DC Bar members to participate with the DC Bar, and we're grateful that they do in lots of different areas. And we'll be sure to do it. We always do. We always reach out to the unsuccessful candidates to encourage them to find other opportunities and direct them to other opportunities within the bar.
And John, just to, as we finish up this, and Bob, I think that you had mentioned, Bob, before that this was not extraordinary, but it was great news that we had so many candidates to really come forward. And that,
well, I think we can use the word extraordinary. I mean, the number of people that we had more than 40 candidates for the Board of Governors. I mean, that's the first time that's how I've been the CEO now for 7 years. That's by far the most we've ever had. There's always a little bit of juggling with like the treasurer and treasurer elect position, but we had four or five candidates for each one of those as well. So we were blessed with an abundance of very qualified candidates, and it took some doing in order to get that list down to the folks that you see here on the slate. But the committee did great work. We had great candidates, and as John mentioned, it's a diverse and experienced slate in lots of different ways, not necessarily all with bar experience, but with other leadership experience that could really enhance the governance of the DC bar.
I guess that I'm just excited to hear that, plus to hear Darren talk about the 40 people, or I guess the number of people that are in the John Payton Leadership Academy, that it really does.
Yeah, 30 members.
30
which
members.
Is 30. 30, 30 the goal was 24 and we have 30.
But all that represents, and I'm excited to see that we have that, the new wave of active people interested in the bar and to become involved, Darren, and to really use the John Payton Leadership Academy can be a pipeline for the bar as well. So
That's the way it was always intended.
right. So hopefully we'll see that. But before you leave, John, I want to make sure that we do take this vote. I would need a motion to accept the nominations committee recommendation to appoint Ghaffar Chowdhury as the non-lawyer member to the Board of Governors.
I so move.
Thank you, Ellen. Second?
Second.
Diane has seconded. It's been moved and seconded that we accept the nominations committee recommendation. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
Opposed.
One opposed. Thank you, Natalie. Well, thank you, John. Thank you so much for your service on the nominations committee. I did hear that you had a great group and then all these potential candidates to really look at. And we do appreciate your effort and your work leading that effort. Thank you so much.
Thank you for that. And thanks to everyone on the call and to my fellow committee members, Ellen and others here as well.
Thanks for your great work, John. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, we'll now turn our attention to the budget committee report. That is an action item, tab 7 of your materials. We did have a report by Sean at our last meeting and, you know, gave us some time to really look over the report and to prepare for this vote. But before we do that, Sean, do you have any remarks you'd like to share before we do the vote?
Are you trying to suggest, Charles, I don't need to do the full report again?
No, you don't.
So thanks, Charles. Obviously we approved the Pro Bono Center's budget at the previous meeting. Before the Board of Governors for the DC Bar today is the FY25 budget, which I did present on in great detail at the last meeting. Thank you for everybody being there for that and the questions that we got. Just high level summary, the recommended budget from the budget committee includes a $585,000 budgeted deficit, which is slightly above the current fiscal year's budgeted deficit. This includes a 5.4% increase in revenue, which is primarily supported through a 3% increase in license fee rates for active members, and includes a projection of a 1.8% growth in those total number of members, a 2.9% increase in the rate for inactive members, with a projected 1.5% increase in number of members there, and then a 2.7% increase in license fees for judicial members, with a projected increase of 31% of members there because of a change in allowing additional members there. And also, as I mentioned at the previous meeting, we will continue to include the buy one, get an unlimited number of communities memberships as part of the proposal, which really worked out well. There was a 58% increase in the member registrations and communities during FY24 over the previous year. So that is working out very well. On the expense side, in the recommended budget, we're projecting a 5.5% increase overall, which includes a 3% increase in the merit pool rate for staff and a 2% market adjustment pool, a small increase in the fringe rate from 34% to 35%, adding two positions in programs and facilities. We will also be hosting the Judicial and Bar Conference in FY2025, which adds about $300,000 in expenses for that fiscal year. And then finally, a small increase of 1.5% in building cost for the bar. We will also be funding the Client Security Fund for $250,000 to make sure we meet the maximum under the bar's reserve policy. And then on the capital expenditure side, budgeted $805,000, which includes upgrades to the garage and infrastructure for ODC and BPR, as well as a refresh of the DC Bar website and Washington Lawyer, and finally some technology upgrades to our meeting rooms throughout the building. So the budget committee continues to recommend and ask for a vote today of the Board of Governors for the proposed FY2025 budget.
Well, thank you, Sean. Thank you very much. Well, we'd like to move, I guess, informally. Are there any questions that you want to ask Sean at this point? If we can do it later in terms of a motion after, but I just wanted to see if anyone had any preliminary thoughts, any things they want to share. See, I don't see anything. Go ahead.
And I'm not doubting anything is necessary, but I was curious about the technology because I know it's obviously such a new building and I thought everything we have is probably new. And maybe I just missed what the description was. I'm sure it's fine. I just was more interested in knowing, like, what are we buying?
Wow. It is true that the building has great technology. However, it was designed pre-COVID. And as a result, a lot of the technology, like Zoom, was barely a thing back then. Mm-hmm. The video conferencing platform we use was something completely different. Everything has to be converted over to make it sort of Zoom accessible, if you will. Yeah. As you know, we had to add microphones we had to add mics in the boardroom in order to make it better in terms of the way we're currently using it. And that's true of all the conference rooms. Every one of them needs to be upgraded slightly in order to accommodate what is now the current technology. And plus, you know, things change over time. But that is the primary issue. It's the way that we do video conferencing now is very different than it was pre-COVID.
Got it. Yeah, like I said, I didn't mean to sound cynical. I was more, if anything, just like, fun.
When I saw, because remember, they present the budget to me. When I looked at it, I asked all the same questions.
Okay, thank you. Makes perfect sense.
And I had the same question, but I also had another one, which is about the garage. Since the building is relatively new, I know garages need maintenance, but I didn't know what transpired.
So I think Matt can probably speak to this a little bit better, but we're putting in electric vehicle mm-hmm. charging stations.
Yeah, true. That's exactly right, Bob. That's the upgrade to the garage.
Okay. Sounds good. From someone at Energy, it sounds good.
Thank you, Steve. Any other questions, any other thoughts they want to share before we vote? I don't see any on my two screens. Sean?
I'll make a motion that we approve the FY25 budget for the DC Bar as recommended by the Budget Committee.
Second.
Second, Sally. It's been moved and seconded that we accept the budget, proposed FY24-25 budget of the DC Bar as recommended by the Budget Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. Sean, thank you so much. Thanks to you and the committee and Marg and everyone. You did just such a great job moving that through, Sean. And thank you for your work on it.
Thank you to, as you said, Charles, the Marg and the team and the board and the committee members as well. It's great.
Okay. Well, before we close out to our executive session, I just have a few remarks, I think, to supplement what Bob had said. We have made there's an announcement that has already been made. I guess the bar president has not that many opportunities to make sole decisions, but we were able to, with the help of the past award winners, the B. Rosenberg Award the award has been made for 2024 to Paul Geyer, I think is how you pronounce his last name, from the Department of Transportation. The Thurgood Marshall Award will go to Professor John Britton of the UDC David A. Clark School of Law. And currently I'm working on some final awards that will go out in the voluntary bars and communities, et cetera. And we'll be announcing those as soon as that's completed. But you all know that I love these meetings. I love to have you guys together. So there are a couple things coming up that I hope, if you have time for, that you can join us for the DC Bar Pro Bono Day, the Board of Governors Day, that is going to be at the Legal Advice and Referral Clinic will be this coming Saturday from 9 to 4 at Bread for the City, 1700 Marion Barry Avenue. And we really would like for you all to come out, if you can, to be a part of the effort to service the clinic and to service DC residents. Also, you know, that judicial leadership luncheon that's coming up, since it's the first time, Bob, I guess that it's been done in person in some time, it would really be great if you all could make time on your calendar for that. I think that's April the 25th. It's a Thursday. I keep talking and mentioning the Lawyers Have Heart. We really want you to come out, even if you don't run or walk. It'd be great to have you all to be a part of the DC team. And that's on Saturday, May 18th. And one of my final opportunities as president will be the DMV President's Panel, where we'll have the president of the Maryland Bar, the DC Bar, as well as the Virginia Bar. We'll all be working on a panel. And we'd like to have you guys come to that. I think that's Tuesday, May 21st. And then finally, we're always looking for contributions from Board of Governors members to the Pro Bono Center to honor in honor of the president's reception for our incoming president, Sean Snyder. Please consider that. I think you would have received information in the mail about that as well. And then the Celebration of Leadership is on, I think that's a Thursday, June 20th. And we really want you guys to show up. This will be, you know, my last official duty or responsibility as president. And then we'll be honoring Sean coming in. So it'd be great if we could have a good attendance by Board of Governors members. So how does that work for Board of Governors members in terms of they have to pay or they don't have to pay?
I'm sorry, they're paying for?
The Board of Governors, the Celebration of Leadership.
Oh, they don't pay for the Celebration of Leadership.
Okay, so you don't have to pay. So
yeah, No.
We want you there. We want you there, please.
Yeah, we absolutely want you there. Yeah. So I just want to make sure we're clear about this. So the president's reception obviously precedes the Celebration of Leadership. The president's reception, we would like you to make a donation, of course. We like everybody, 100% participation from the board. We think that would be fantastic. But you don't need to pay to actually come to the Celebration of Leadership and dinner. You are honored guests, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that would be great. Well, those are the upcoming events. And then as Bob said, we have one more meeting. So I will really thank you all for coming to our meeting. We had